This is episode 31 of Paranormal Stories. This week is a shorter episode with just one book, and that book is Dawn of the Flying Saucers, Aerial UFO Encounters and Official Investigations, 1946-1949, by Graham Rendell. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to research and work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such fascinating information which never makes it into the podcast. And here, I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. And I've put the links to the books in the show notes. And I did seek permission to record this from the author, and he kindly said yes. And there is a Past Lives podcast Facebook group, and if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy this podcast, be sure to leave a review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. So this is from Graham Rendell's book, Dawn of the Flying Saucers, Aerial UFO Encounters and Official Investigations, 1946-1949. And the phrase flying saucer started in 1947 with the sighting Kenneth Arnold reported, where he described the UFOs he saw as skipping through the air just like a saucer skipping on water. The objects he saw were not saucer-shaped. It was a newspaper that reported Kenneth Arnold's sighting as flying saucers. So this is what Graham has written. At the time of the incident, Kenneth Arnold was 32 years of age. He had his own business handling, distributing, selling and installing automatic and manual firefighting equipment over 5 western states. He'd begun to receive flying lessons as a boy, but did not receive a license until 1943 due to cost grounds. Since 1944, he had owned his own aeroplane and bought a new 3-seat Calair A3 in January 1947, an example built in Afton, Wyoming. Arnold spent up between 40 and 100 hours in the air each month, often landing in fields and pastures due to the nature of his business. At around 1400 hours on the 24th of June 1947, Kenneth Arnold had finished his work for the Central Air Service at Chehalis, Washington State. He was planning to fly to Yakima, but delayed the trip for an hour as he wanted to help look for a US Marine Corps transport aircraft that had reportedly gone down in the vicinity of Mount Rainier in December 1946. By June 1947, the wreckage had still not been located. The wreck of the R-5C Commando was finally discovered during July, 10,500 feet up on the South Tahoma Glacier, with the bodies of 25 of the 32 Marines on board also being found. Arnold flew directly towards the volcano after climbing up to 9,500 feet, just above the altitude of the high plateau on which the peak resides. He carried out one sweep of the plateau itself, scanning all of its various ridges, and then flew across to the western side, looking down into the canyon towards the town of Ashford. Unable to see any wreckage, the pilot turned 360 degrees above the small town of Mineral, and then headed for Mount Rainier again, climbing back to 9,200 feet. His hour virtually used up, Arnold pointed the aircraft in the direction of Yakima, trimming it to fly straight and level, with little input from himself, and sat back to enjoy the spectacular view. A DC-4 transport up around 14,000 feet was to his left and behind him, estimated at about 15 miles away. It was the only other thing in the sky with Kenneth Arnold in the general area, or at least so he believed. And this is what Kenneth said. The sky and air was clear as crystal. I hadn't flown more than 2 or 3 minutes on my course when a bright flash reflected off my airplane. It startled me as I thought I was too close to some other aircraft. I looked every place in the sky and couldn't find where the reflection had come from until I looked to the left and the north of Mount Rainier, where I observed a chain of 9 peculiar-looking aircraft flying from north to south at approximately 9,500 feet elevation and going seemingly in a definite direction of about 170 degrees. These objects were quite far away. I was unable for a few seconds to make out their shape or their formation. Very shortly they approached Mount Rainier and I observed their outline against the snow quite plainly. Graham continues, once he had managed to get a look at them, Kenneth Arnold was surprised to see that the objects did not seem like normal aircraft to him. He said, I thought it was very peculiar that I couldn't find their tails, but assumed they were some kind of jet plane. I was determined to clock their speed as I had 2 definite points I could clock them by. The air was so clear that it was very easy to see objects and determine their approximate shape and size at almost 50 miles that day. Graham continued. Arnold noted the time read 1459 hours as the first object in the formation of nine passed the southern edge of Mount Rainier. He watched them with interest, having never seen so many aircraft flying so close to the mountaintops. The pilot likened them to geese flying in a diagonal line, as if they were linked together. All nine objects held a definite inline formation, but also seemed to swerve in and out and around the high mountain peaks. They were flying at about the same level as Arnold was. However, the lack of tail surfaces troubled the pilot. Arnold said, "What kept bothering me as I watched them flip and flash in the sun right along their path was the fact that I couldn't make out any tail on them, and I'm sure that any pilot would justify more than a second look at such a plane." Kenneth Arnold used a handy tool to estimate their size as compared to the nearby DC-4 airliner that he had previously seen. Kenneth Arnold said, "I observed them quite plainly, and I estimate my distance from them, which was almost at right angles, be between 20 to 25 miles. I knew they must be very large to observe their shape at that distance, even on a clear day, as it was that Tuesday. In fact, I compared a Zeus fastener or cowling tool I had in my pocket with them, holding it up on them and holding it up on the DC-4, that I could observe at quite a distance to my left, and they seemed smaller than the DC-4, but I should judge their span would have been twice as wide as the furthest engines on each side of the fuselage of the DC-4. Graham continues, "The pilot watched as the nine objects passed another snow-covered ridge between Mount Rainier and Mount Adams. As the first one passed the south crest of this ridge, the last was passing over its northern crest. As he was flying in that direction as well, Arnold took the opportunity to measure the length of the ridge for himself. It was about 5 miles long. Using this information, he calculated that the chain of nine objects was also about 5 miles in length. As the last one passed the southernmost high crest of Mount Adams, the pilot checked his watch again. The objects had covered the distance in 1:42. Arnold continued the search for the marine transport aircraft for another 15 minutes and then called it a day. He still had the objects on his mind, so headed for Yakima, where he landed. Over the years, there have been numerous descriptions of the objects that the pilot claimed to have seen near Mount Rainier. This is from his own words. By the time they reached Mount Adams, they were out of my range of vision as far as determining shape and form. Of course, when the sun reflected from one or two or three of these units, they appeared to be completely round. But I am making a drawing of the best of my ability, which I am including, as well as the shape I observed these objects to be as they passed the snow-covered ridges, as well as Mount Rainier. When these objects were flying approximately straight and level, they were just a thin black line, and when they flipped was the only time I could get a judgment as to their size." After landing at Yakima around 1600 hours local time, Arnold told his story to his friend, the airport manager Al Baxter. The latter listened patiently, but was not too impressed with the tale of nine strange flying objects, and didn't entirely believe the pilot. Arnold then flew to Pendleton, Oregon, where he talked to more friends who, instead of scoffing, suggested that the objects may have been guided missiles. One of them, a crop duster pilot who had served in the Air Force during the war, told him the following, "What you observed, I am convinced, is some type of jet or rocket-propelled ship that is in the process of being tested by our government, or even it could possibly be by some foreign government." According to Arnold's 1952 book, The Coming of the Saucers, this friend was a helicopter pilot based in Yakima, one of the group of airmen Baxter had called into his office to listen to the businessman's strange story. He also stated in his book that he had forgot to tell them that one object looked different from the rest. Arnold said, "I remembered that I had forgotten to mention the fact that one of those crafts looked different from the rest. It was darker and of a slightly different shape." Kenneth Arnold had obviously forgotten about this different-looking object when he wrote the letter for the investigators, it seemed. It was whilst flying to Pendleton that Arnold supposedly calculated the speed of the objects using a map and ruler, thinking his figures were out due to concentrating more on flying the aircraft. Once on the ground, he apparently mentioned the speed to his friends there. They set about trying to work out their own numbers. When most had agreed something around 1,700 miles per hour, it dawned on them that they may well have been measuring a distance using points which were too high up on both mountains. Kenneth Arnold said, "To me, that evening, that was that. They were guided missiles, remotely controlled. I knew that speeds of this velocity, the human body simply could not stand, particularly considering the flipping, erratic movements of these strange craft." Hello listeners, this is Simon. Now, as some of you know, I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy and I'm certified in past life regression therapy. And in the past few weeks, I've taken many clients through some amazing and healing past life regressions. And I conduct sessions over Zoom and I've had clients from many countries around the world. Now, when you go through a past life regression, you will feel totally in control and remember everything. And also, I record the whole session and send you an MP3 afterwards. And this gives you space to relax and go with the flow, knowing that you can listen back later and analyse what you experienced if you need to. So if you ever wanted to explore your past lives in a single session or have an issue you want to work on, you can go to my website at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk and book a free 20-minute consultation. And at the moment, I'm offering a 25% discount to everyone that has signed up to the Patreon campaign. The link is in the show notes. So this week, the book that I read from is called Dawn of the Flying Saucers, Aerial UFO Encounters and Official Investigations, 1946 to 1949, by Graham Rendell. And if you want to buy the book, there is info and links in the show notes. And a great way to support this podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Past Life Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. And for $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. Just go to patreon.com/pastlivespodcast or click on the button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. Just so you know, if you're a patron, you get a 25% discount when you book a past life regression session with me. And I'm offering a free consultation call that can be booked on my website. And there's a Past Lives Podcast Facebook group. And if you'd like to join, you'd be very welcome. And if you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.